promise that they can accomplish a particular result. And so to the extent that you see advertisements in which guarantees of that type are made, we are taking action against those. There have been a number of advertisements also where at the end of the advertisement, the individual says, licensed by the State Bar of California. Now, that to us
only
is...
Only for a short while longer.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Until the end of the month.
But to us, that in itself is misleading because it seems to either say that they have some special certificate or authorization by the State Bar to provide that sort of service, or that we are somehow endorsing the services right. they provide, when in reality all they're saying is they're admitted to the practice for now. So we have been issuing cease and desist letters to them. We have been, attorneys are required to keep copies of all advertisements for a period of at least 2 years. We have been demanding, pursuant to that rule, copies of all their advertisements so that we have the evidence to pursue them with. And so far that's been pretty successful in making them reevaluate the advertisements that they've been broadcasting or sending out. We also participated about 10 days ago with the Department of Real Estate, with the Attorney General's office, and with the local district attorney's office in a sting operation in Lodi, where a loan modification business with its headquarters in Overland, Kansas, was conducting what we thought was a seminar for people who might be interested in potential loan modifications. It turned out that what it really was a meeting for them to recruit associates to bring in other people for this loan modification scheme. So we were able to get names, issue cease and desist orders. We could not get the name of any particular attorney involved, but the Department of Real Estate informed everybody that what was occurring was illegal. We got a lot of information which the DA's office can use to prosecute the organization, so it was a very successful cooperative effort. We are also plagued somewhat by a limitation of resources. We have not enough resources to establish a separate unit for this, but we have designated one of our trial investigative units in Los Angeles to handle all of these matters so that we can concentrate our efforts. So their caseload is compensated for and more cases given to the other units, and yet we don't have either the investigative or attorney resources to actually create a task force that deals with nothing but this. We also have a subunit within our San Francisco trial investigative unit to try to deal with this as well. The Department of Real Estate has, because some of these issues that have come up are somewhat new to our investigators and attorneys, they are coming in the next couple of weeks to do an extensive training program for our personnel on this issue, and we're looking forward to moving on these things very quickly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you to this panel. Mr. Drexel, I would just have a few questions to follow up on some of the things that you said. One, with regard to the individual who you are returning the 2,300 case files to the former clients, is that person in the process of disbarment at this point? Is that was a licensed attorney? Can you comment on that?
Yes, he. When the court takes over jurisdiction of the practice, the attorney is then subject to being placed on inactive enrollment and being ineligible to practice law, pending any disciplinary action that we take. So. If he has not actually been inactively enrolled now, he will be within the next few days. And so he will not be allowed to practice again until he either resigns and his resignation is accepted or he is disciplined or disbarred.
Okay. And how would you best advise someone to file a complaint properly in the event that they would like someone's activities to be looked into?
We have our complaint form is on our website, which is www.calbar.ca.gov. Both the instructions and the form itself can be downloaded from our website. It's a very simple form to fill out and send in, along with copies of any documentation that relate to the complaint. And then we are statutorily obligated to investigate every written complaint that we receive. And we have a statutory guideline of 6 months within which to investigate these matters. Certainly, cases in which we get multiple complaints against a single individual, we give higher priority because they're certainly out there potentially causing significant danger to a large number of the members of the public. As in Mr. Roth's case, where you get multiple complaints or concerns, we can actually take additional action, for instance, going into Superior Court and asking the court to take jurisdiction of the practice.
And if people happen to call in for advice or to complain, are they then advised that there's a process that must be followed, a written complaint in order for you to pursue?
Absolutely, and we either provide them, if they have access to the internet, they're given the website address and the instructions for downloading the complaint form, or if they don't, we send the form to them.
And is there any online opportunity for filing these complaints, or is it strictly a downloaded form that then has to be mailed in?
It's strictly downloaded form to be mailed in.
And I'm assuming emails are not accepted as a written
We have accepted them. We prefer not. Usually, we do need supporting documentation, and so,
okay.
Although you know, as people get more knowledgeable and can PDF or scan documents, mm-hmm. that may be acceptable. But mm-hmm. but right now, we primarily get it through the mail.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Let me throw out another couple questions for the entire panel. We've asked this question of other panels, but I'll ask this question of this panel again. What's the best way we can help a consumer determine whether an entity that they're dealing with is legitimate or it's a scam? What's the best way? What would you tell a consumer? How would they check it out? You know, make sure that they're not running afoul of a scam artist.
David, go first. I'll take it next.
Well, I think because the scams are ever growing and ever evolving, we actually purposefully hesitate to tell people exactly what they can do because the scam artists are so good at changing up how they do their presentation. So what we do tell people is just to be extra cautious, to call into lines, like if you're going to call the Department of Real Estate, use the Department of Real Estate actual telephone number that you find in the Yellow Pages or on the internet. Call the local district attorney's office or a consumer protection group, call the state bar, and we can help you determine whether or not an organization is real. Because they pop up so often and so fast that sometimes it takes us a while to figure out, is this a legitimate company or is it not a legitimate company? And when you're starting to have unscrupulous lawyers and real estate agents getting involved in these scams, it is becoming very murky water. It boils down to almost what you learned in kindergarten. You use your common sense. If something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. We always, when we go to hearings, I go with Mabel, Elise Brown a lot to around the community. We tell people that you're under stress, that you're facing imminent, eviction or foreclosure home, to take a deep breath, take a time out to call somebody and double check. And that's the best advice we really can give because it really has become very treacherous territory out there.
Mm-hmm. So once again, a consumer could just call their local county district attorney's office.
Yeah.
And they would be able to speak to some consumer rep or an individual who would then be able to do some checking
right.
with regard to
a
particular entity.
I can speak for the Bay Area because we do liaison with the San Francisco District Attorney's Office, mm-hmm. Contra Costa, San Joaquin County, Napa, Solano, San Mateo, Santa Clara, Alameda. We all speak to each other, and I do know all of those DAs personally, so I feel comfortable saying that if they were to call any of those offices, even if, let's say, a San Francisco resident accidentally calls Alameda County, we're not going to just hang up on them. Mm-hmm. We're going to say, here's the DA in San Francisco you can call, or let us see if we can help you.
You direct them to the right person.
Right.
Great. Any other comments on that? Yes.
In the greater Los Angeles area, we're fortunate to have a dedicated LA County Department of Consumer Affairs, which has a full-time real estate fraud section funded partly through the grant process. The LA County Department of Consumer Affairs consumer hotline can be reached at area code 213-974-1452. But my office, which fields thousands of consumer calls a year as well, would be happy to direct a consumer to the appropriate regional law enforcement or regulatory body to help a consumer do his or her homework, his due diligence before he or she signs on the dotted line. And my number for that division, my consumer protection division, is area code 213-580-3273. I'll add only to that that the key is not only doing the homework, but three or four of those warning signs or red flags we spoke about today almost certainly can help a consumer know to a fact that the person that they're dealing with is a scam artist. No legitimate person asks for a great deal of payment or any payment up front. No legitimate service provider promises a result or guarantees or assures a result. Virtually no legitimate service provider uses ADAD or robo calls or mass mailers of this kind. Those are all earmarks of near 100% certainty for screening out legitimate service providers from con artists. Francis, I know you may have some contact information.
I do. Our advice to consumers is, first of all, don't pay money to anyone for this for this so-called service.
Yes.
Don't pay money. Work directly with your banks. Contact your banks. We're working on that end to try and make the banks more responsive. But don't pay money up front. We cannot tell the legitimate people from the illegitimate ones. And that even goes to, there's some more recent scams where people are setting up sort of phony nonprofits, where they're funneling stuff into the nonprofits,
right,
which is a complete scam. So we, even the fact that they're a nonprofit doesn't necessarily mean they're legitimate, although there are very many legitimate nonprofits, but this is a more recent scam that has evolved. So we can't tell the legitimate ones from the scammers. So don't pay money up front.
But legitimate organizations do exist. HUD-certified counselors that we've heard about from the agencies we've heard about before, both Francis's office, Dave's, Scott's, and mine, routinely refer you there. There is a place to go where someone has been certified by the federal HUD as being competent to do this work. Do not pay up front money to someone who is not.
Right, and I would just add one more. Don't pay anything up front, and certainly do not sign over the deed
ever
to your
under
house.
Any circumstances.
Ever.
No,
that's
provider.
Never going to be legitimate.
No legitimate provider will ever ask for that. That is an absolute certain indicator.
Right. Okay, well, just want to thank all of you again for your strong advocacy, your work towards enforcement of laws we passed to try to help the situation, and your success in cracking down on a lot of these scam artists. And clearly from all the testimony we heard today, there's plenty of work to do, because unfortunately scam artists still keep figuring out ways to take advantage of circumstances and situations. And you know, these are tough times, and it is really, you know, sometimes I just feel so outraged at the fact that these are the times where people are hurt the most, when they're down, and we should do whatever we can to help our consumers through these difficult times. So thank you for your work, and please continue to stay in touch. If you have other ideas for future legislation, we'd be glad to continue to work with you. So let me thank all of the panelists that were here today for taking the time out to be with us. The public has had an opportunity to hear where they can reach all of you, and I hope that they will also take advantage of the help that you will provide to them as well. So let me thank you for that. And Benjamin is reminding me that now is the time for public comments. If anyone here in the audience would wish to come forward and address us, you are welcome to do that.
Thank you once again, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you.
For bringing this attention to this very serious problem.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. And may I just, as we're waiting here for a moment, something I didn't mention earlier, Jennifer Douglas, one of the committee secretaries, is celebrating her birthday today. And she's no longer with us in the audience, but I'm sure she's listening back in the office. So if you could just join me all in wishing her a very happy birthday and allow her to celebrate a good day and a busy day. So Jennifer, happy birthday from all of us. Thank you all very much. And if there are no public comments, we will adjourn this meeting. Thank you again all for your help today. Thank you.